Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Now, it's visiting critic time, and this week, Donal Fallon, you'll know him, broadcaster and historian. He has been in the trenches for us. Now, he's released a book exploring the history of the best places to while a night away in Dublin City. So we said to him, well, it's time for you to look at the mornings. And Donal is here to tell us how you got on. This is the 5am club you joined. Yeah. When did you start this
Well, funnily enough, dear listener, right, originally me and Susan were talking about doing this next week. And I said, that's fine, next week is pretty clear for me. We did it this week instead. This was a clear week as well. Thing happened on Sunday. You might have heard about it. Troy Paris.
If ever you wanted to go out.
That made Monday particularly difficult. So it wasn't the easiest start to a week of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. That national hangover on Monday was something else, wasn't it?
Oh my God. Yeah, I think it's still going on. Some people are still hoarse.
Well, I have a friend who moved out to Drogheda, and they're saying to me it was the first morning, the first Monday morning they could remember where there were seats on the train into Dublin.
They had been booked but didn't turn up. Yeah. Now, are early mornings a strange thing for you to be doing?
They are. I'm a real night owl. Writers are very divided over when is the best time to write. Yeah. So Salman Rushdie says he gets up in the morning and he writes in his pyjamas. And he says that works for him. Yeah. And before he's even brushed his teeth, he's at the laptop and he's working.
That definitely works for him.
Hemingway claimed to be a morning writer. No, I don't believe him.
There's no way.
No. You know, Hemingway said write drunk and edit sober as well. So we have to decide which Hemingway we believe.
Patrick Kavanagh was an early morning writer. But that was mostly so he could leave the rest of the day to hit the pub.
Absolutely.
Even though he started drinking late in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And made his way down but the King of Baggot Street towards McDade's and everywhere else in town.
But so for me,
I like to write at night, and I edit a podcast about Dublin history. I do that at night. So for me, the night is when the writing happens. And getting up that early in the morning was a real challenge.
Three castles burning for the two people who may not have heard about it at the stage in the country. I was even wondering, is there merch? Because I saw someone, I'm pretty sure, with a Three Castles Burning t-shirt.
There you go.
So that was definitely a thing. Okay, that was it. So nighttime, now you were getting up at 5 a.m. What time did you go to bed at?
In the morning. You'd be going to bed about 10 o'clock.
Oh, right.
To get up at 5.
Would you be asleep straight away
7 hours for me is really, really important.
You're asleep hitting the pillow. Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm asleep immediately. Right. When you're getting up at that time in the morning, you notice a couple of things. Where I live in a place called Larkfield Gardens, which is in Kimmage.
Oh, yeah.
The estate agents would say it's in Terenure, but it's very much in Kimmage. And there's lots of urban foxes. One morning I would come down at 5:10, put the blinds up, and there were two foxes sitting in the garden.
Go away.
Looking at me.
Never seen them before.
Never seen them before. So I came to the conclusion that there's an entire different ecosystem from ours. And going for a walk in the morning, 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning.
Pitch black.
And seeing those urban foxes at a time when they feel comfortable and it's their suburb that early in the morning.
So this is the new really vantage nice you're having of the city that you love.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, to see things a little bit differently. Given that the book is about public houses, I thought what I had to do one morning was go and see an early house.
Oh.
Of which there's technically, I would say there's only three left in the city.
Yeah.
Open their doors at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. There's a few that open at 9 and 30.
Okay.
Which are, the day's gone by then, you know.
But
seven a.m. three pubs open their doors in the city. And I said, you know what, I'm getting up at 5 a.m. for this slot. I might as well go into one of them. So I went into O'Neill's. Malloy's on Talbot Street, which is an absolutely gorgeous interior. One of the mornings, which was amazing. And again, you learn that there's a different rhythm to life.
Were there people there?
People who work nights are there.
Of course,
There's people, for some people, that's the end of the day, not the beginning of the day.
It's probably easier to do it as well when it's dark at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But you're up before the bin men, you know, so you kind of think what you're going to do. But to walk into this pub at 7:30 in the morning, and it's a gorgeous Victorian interior. It has the advertising windows for the DWD whiskey and all these brands that no longer exist, and the little snugs in the corner and everything. And to walk in the door, it's 7:30 in the morning, but it feels like 7:30 in the evening.
Was there anyone around when you were going in, like on the streets?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you go into the city that time in the morning, there's life about the place. But one of my heroes was the great Con Houlihan, the sports writer. And even on the way here in the taxi, I mentioned his name. And a taxi man blessed himself and said, "Ah, Con.
Really?
Ah, Con." And he was reciting match reports at me. The very famous match reports. Yeah. He described the Dublin goalkeeper, Paddy Cullen, running back to his goal like a woman who smelt a cake burning in the oven. This taxi man could
Mikey Sheen's lobbed goal.
Yes. Yeah. Or he was a St. Pat's man, Con. I'll never forget. He said, "The people of Inchicore have followed St. Pat's through tin and tinner." Which is a wonderful observation on our lack of success. But Con used to get up at 4:30 in the morning.
Did he really?
And that was the time he did his writing. And he would tend to arrive into an early house off the Ned's on Townsend Street.
Oh, yeah.
Or in the markets at about half seven in the morning himself. So for some people, they just write better at that time. And for Con, half four was as good a time as any to write a column. And he asked a question in one of his columns. He said, what's the difference between having a drink at half seven in the morning and half seven in the evening?
And you as a historian would know, was it the Middle Ages they used to split shift their sleep? They would go to sleep in the in the wintertime particularly and get up. There'd be activity, wouldn't there, for a couple of hours in the middle of the night. And everyone just go back to bed again for another 3 or 4 hours.
Absolutely. And when I heard about this idea of the 5 a.m. club, I wondered, like, where did this come from? So I did a bit of digging online to see who are the proponents of this idea.
Worldwide.
It very much emerges in a kind of a male sphere of Twitter, where you've got a load of men saying, this has changed my life. I get up, I do 20 minutes of exercise, I do 20 minutes of whatever else.
And corporate jobs generally.
Corporate jobs. Anyone I mentioned this to, female friends, they said, yeah, I get up at 6 o'clock anyway. Or I get up at half five, you know, I'm up at half five ironing school uniforms or making lunches for
There's
the
no club so, that's specifically
exactly,
set up.
The idea that this is some great innovative idea to young lads in Silicon Valley seems to be a big thing. But for a lot of people, the day does start generally that early in the morning. So maybe it's half an hour earlier or 45 minutes earlier than some people are starting their day anyway.
It feels like the 5 a.m. club are kind of being seen out and about because they're gymming, they're walking down the streets with their coffee cup.
They're tweeting about us.
Maybe the women who are at 5 a.m. they're at home, aren't they, doing
Absolutely.
The jobs before they go to
Absolutely.
Work.
Absolutely.
They're working the one, in the house all day.
They're the one ironing the school uniform or preparing the lunch or whatever it might be. We have a cat we only got in recent times, Bloom. Named in honour, of course, of Leopold Bloom.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah,
just about the only thing Leopold Bloom truly loves after Molly in the book is his cat. So we call the cat Bloom. And Bloom has his own, he's about 5 months old now. So he thinks five is a perfectly normal time to jump on your head. So leaving the door open instead of closing the door at night was a way of naturally having a 5 o'clock alarm beyond just the phone. But getting up to feed him at 5 o'clock, he was amazed for the first time ever people were getting up when he jumped on their heads. So he'll be very confused.
You
next,
ruined the fun for
next
him.
Week. But so
what colour is Bloom?
Bloom is a ginger tabby, particularly excited kind of cat, as listeners will know. Sometimes you come home and you're like, where is Bloom? Where is Bloom? And he's up there in the curtains.
Gazing. Really?
Yeah, gazing down at it. Very excited young ginger tabby.
Do you have to train a cat at 5 months and teach him?
Well, you can't really do a whole lot with a cat until the dreaded snip comes, and that will be coming next week for Mr. Bloom. I actually left the radio on at home. I wonder, is he looking at the radio going, that's your man. Where is he? I can't see
for
him.
Sure. I mean, they're clever things.
Yeah, absolutely. So he's going for the snip next week, and I think then we're going to let him outside.
That'll put manners on
him. That'll put manners on him.
What was the hardest part about it, apart from just feeling, having that kind of like, ugh?
Well, the best thing about it was getting your emails done at that time when people can't email you back. You know, so you can,
there is that.
You can clear the conversations.
Nobody's WhatsApping you either.
Exactly. You can clear what you want to begin. People who don't like you very much are those who forgot to turn off their notifications. So they get the phone going, boom, boom.
Oh, yeah.
And it's 5:10 and you've decided to send them an email. That happened a few times where people are like, you've woken me
angry
up.
Angry response.
And I'm not going on the Alaric Callan show Friday, you are.
Sort so out your do not disturb and your sleep.
Exactly. People aren't particularly happy with me emailing them. But yeah, the hardest thing about it is probably the fact that you're dozing off at like 9:30 or 10 at night.
Naturally.
Kind of strange.
That's your cycle is. Do you feel sleepy in the afternoon? Was there a bit of a crash?
No, I could power through the day, but by about 9:30 it was time to go to bed. And that's for me key time to be doing stuff.
I love an early night now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you are a pubs man, aren't you? You love going to the pub.
Well, I mean, the book is not a guidebook to pubs. I'd emphasize that. What I wanted to do was write a social and cultural history of the pub, to look back on it. We're in a bad moment in terms of the industry.
Are.
I mean,
we
in
are.
The last 20 years, we've lost a quarter of the pubs in this country, which is extraordinary.
That's kind of
There's a whole load of reasons for that. I mean, the obvious one, the elephant in the room is the pandemic, and that did reshape our lives in all kinds of ways. Yeah. But there are other factors too, lifestyle changes and a whole host of things across the country. So it felt like a moment in time where it was worth casting a gaze over this industry and what it's meant and what it means in our lives.
You've done a beautiful job on it. But I want to conclude your visiting critic duties, first of all. 5 a.m. club, will you continue this? Would you return to it?
I'm going to move the alarm forward about 45 minutes.
Really? So quarter to six?
So I normally get up at 7-ish.
Okay.
I'm going to try get up between 6:15 and 6:30.
So you're giving yourself
and
an extra.
I can hear friends of mine that, you know, the Dublin suburbs have expanded to the point that they're almost touching Newry, right? I have friends that are up very early in the morning anyway.
That's right.
They're saying, that's a lie-in, son. You know, but for me, I'd be quite happy to try and get up at 45 minutes earlier and get that little bit more done at the beginning of the day.
Because no one's bothering you. It's a nice.
There's just something amazing about not getting an email back immediately.
There's also this kind of smugness as well, isn't
there? Yeah.
Well, I'm up long before the rest of you.
You don't, the Taoiseach for people who get up early in the morning. Remember that?
I do remember. How did that go? He's gone now. So you are, this is kind of like every visiting critic, they find a new experience and it moves something in them. This kind of worked.
Yeah, I mean, to see Dublin anew was beautiful. To go in, I would deliberately go into the city at like 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And just to see the people who we owe so much to, the people who keep the city streets clean, the people that are going about their working day at that time in the morning.
The hidden life of the city.
Yeah, the hidden life of a city. And the city moves because lots of different people are doing their little bit and pushing it in the right direction.
And I tell you what, if you started in these dark months, it gets lovelier and lovelier as you come into springtime, and then you can be really smug in the summer because you feel like anything after that is too late because the light is up and going at 3-4 o'clock in the morning by the height of summer. Okay, successful with that. You're kind of going to stick with it.
Absolutely.
Is the business. Actually, some people texting in on the 5 a.m. Good morning. My 18-month-old granddaughter Lucy is definitely part of the 5 a.m. club. If you're not on purpose. I used to work in Tara Street, late 80s. Con Hoolan would walk by about 11 o'clock most mornings with a long coat heading to work in Mulligan's in Poolbeg Street, says Paul in Clondalkin.
Yeah.
I'd love there's a whole chapter to
There had to be a chapter on Con. The centenary is coming up in December and I just wanted to honour him.
Is it really?
And the Scotch House, which is gone. Replaced by an office block called the Scotch House.
Yes.
The White Horse.
The White Horse, is that on the Quays in Dublin?
Yeah, that's now a Starbucks. That's now a Starbucks.
There's so many pubs, there are Starbucks and hotels.
Mulligan's. And there's a shrine to Con in Mulligan's, which was unveiled in his own lifetime.
Oh, really?
Which is just extraordinary.
That's very rare.
A plaque in the ground outside the palace. He attended the unveiling of his own plaque.
And I don't think there's hardly any audio interviews of him because he was such a softly spoken man.
Yes, right? And talking into the hand, people will remember. Yeah. Very shy man. Very shy. Always stood apart from people on the Camac Terrace, watching the match on his own.
The Camac Terrace, which
down
was
in Inchicore.
That was his haunt.
That was his haunt.
I absolutely loved it because I was a haunter of many of these pubs. It'd be 15 years ago now. Life has changed. But I had the glorious austerity years, which are brilliant times in pubs.
I was going to see.
you seem far too young to have an adoration of these proper drinking spots, you know, pubs with carpets on the floor and no piped music or televisions, only for special occasions. Why did you want to do this?
I think what inspired it was a number of factors. One, in February 2020, just before everything changed forever, a good friend of mine passed away. It was Tommy Smith. Tommy hated people saying passed away. He died in February 2020. Tommy was a publican and a Republican. He was the co-proprietor of a very famous pub called the Castle Lounge. Everyone calls it Grogan's. Great man of the arts. And he famously allowed art to go on the wall of his pub.
Yeah.
The only gallery in the world where the art gets better the more you drink. And zero commission.
And cheaper.
Zero commission.
That's a good value, actually.
Every time something is sold in Grogan's, start with a painter called Brian McMahon. Every time something is sold, another work of art goes up on the wall. And that's how it functions.
That's it. And to this day.
Really democratic. And in a city where galleries can charge as much as 60% commission, everything goes to the artist.
Right.
So Tommy had given a lot to the arts and he'd given a lot to the causes he believed in his life. And he'd always encourage me to make this book happen. Mm-hmm. I would ask him something. He'd say, no, that's what they say. But the truth is this. And he said, someone has to get to the bottom of a lot of these stories. Why don't you do it? So I promised him in 2020 that I would eventually embark on writing the history of the Dublin pub. Mm-hmm. And finally, we've arrived at it. And it's a subject that people are really passionate about.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. I mean, me and the taxi man had a blazing row on the way here. about something. What's in it, what's not in it.
He hasn't sourced any of the material, has he?
Which is extraordinary, right? So people are very passionate about these pubs. And I think you couldn't write a social history, even a political history of Ireland, without touching on some of these public, the Doheny and Nesbitt School of Economics.
100%.
Where did the camera crews go on the day of the marriage equality referendum? They went to the George. They went to Panty Bar. There's a sense that pubs are part of broader cultural movements and social shifts. And to understand us as a people, you need to have a sense of them.
Tell us about the Bird Flanagan.
I just love pub names. Pub names are brilliant, aren't they?
They're
like the morgue in Temple Oak, it's a great name, isn't it? The morgue. There was a time under legislation where pubs had to host inquests. If someone dies in the immediate locality, the body is brought to the nearest pub.
To the pub.
So you get names like the morgue, the Dead Man's Inn is another example of that. The Bleeding Horse is a great name.
It's an amazing name.
That's a brilliant name, the Bleeding Horse.
They have quotes all around the building, don't they?
So and you're walking into the Bleeding Horse next time, look down. We don't do that enough. We don't look down or look up.
Yeah.
There's a quote from Joseph Sheridan Le Fanu, brilliant writer of ghost stories.
Yeah.
And one of his stories touches on that pub. Bert Flanagan. Willie Flanagan's this famous practical joker in Dublin. He plays all kinds of ridiculous tricks. On one occasion, he goes into the Gresham on the back of a horse after hours, and he orders a drink.
Literally, he rides a horse into the Gresham.
And the barman says, "Sorry, Mr. Flanagan, I can't serve you a drink. We're closed." And he says, "It's not for me, it's for the horse." But there's yarns about him kind of appearing.
When do we think that happened?
An ice skating rink dressed as a bird and laying an egg in the form of a rugby ball. So like this joker who was knocking around mid-20th century Dublin still recalled. Yeah. With the naming of a public house.
You would if you rode a horse in
the Gresham. Exactly. And then great names that go back along to
the It's also because head. it was the population of the city kind of, it was low. So if someone did something spectacular in a pub, all the pubs, the story would get around.
Yeah, I mean, there's no city in the world with such an abundance of characters as Dublin. Just absolutely extraordinary.
What a loaded
people.
Term.
And great name, like Bang Bang, Johnny Forty Coats.
Brilliant names.
Damn the Weather. Hairy Lemon. Like, these are not normal. In any normal society, there's no one walking
totally
around
normal.
And people say, there's Damn the Weather, or there's Hairy Lemon, or there's Johnny Forty Coats. But it seems that the city just naturally, I think, cultivates that kind of culture.
By the way, the morgue, it's the Temple Oge Inn.
Yes.
Is it? And there was a tram line outside it, so that's where
the Blessington tram, and people used to get levelled by the tram. And the joke was, the Battle of Ypres was only a sham compared to the rush for the Blessington tram. But people,
dark humour, didn't
people
they?
Believe that so many people were killed by the tram line that the pub became known as the
That's
morgue.
Why it became,
but in truth, it was just
it was
place the place where inquests were held.
But if you were knocked down by the tram, the chance of where your inquest
That's where you would have ended up, yeah.
Can't believe it's a tram from Temple Oak to Blessington, by the way. But there you go. That's the bit we've lost. Alan Devlin, great actor on the boards of the Gaiety Theatre.
What a man he was.
And everybody goes about the story, don't they, that he... Go on, you tell us what everyone believes, first of all, and what you found out.
There are great characters from the acting world that pop up in the book. Donald McCann, people will never forget seeing Donald McCann on stage. The story of Alan Devlin is a very famous one, that he apparently stormed off stage in the Gaiety, still wearing his microphone, made his way into Neri's. And I've been really nervous about saying this on air all week, so I won't say the word, but apparently he said, "F this for a game of soldiers." And everyone sitting in the theatre heard him ordering and consuming a pint. That's the story.
That's the story.
Everybody truth goes, is, yep. He did storm off the stage.
Okay.
He went to Sinnott's across
the other side of the
Gaiety. Yes, and the sound man heard
Kings
him in the cans.
Street.
The sound man was wearing his cans and he heard him say it, but the audience never heard it.
Ah, go away.
But it's a great yarn. And if you sit in Neri's for more than 10 minutes, someone will tell
someone
you.
Up.
Someone
this
will tell
happened.
That story. It's one of those great stories. It's like William Butler Yeats. The story is that he'd never been in a pub before. And Oliver Sinton.
I believe this until your book, to be
painted
honest.
Painted on the snug in Toners. that Gogarty brought him into Toners. He had a sherry and said, "Right, I've seen enough Gogarty, take me
I
home.
I need to leave here now.
I need to go away. I must arise and go now."
You know? He seemed like a very fey man.
Yeah.
And but the reality is...
No, he'd been part of a poets' club in London that were knocking around a very famous pub over there. Like, he knew pubs. He'd been in plenty of pubs.
He would have been surrounded by blistering alcoholics in that place.
And it was another guy, F.R. Higgins, the poet who brought him to a pub. And his disagreement even over what pub it was.
But Higgins was a great man for a row in a pub.
Absolutely.
So he went with a proper brawler.
There's some line in the book about F.R. Higgins. Someone said something in the palace like... He was kind of manic. He wouldn't walk into a public house with a black eye, but he'd often leave with one. Which is a great review.
But do we know which pub Yeats went to in the end?
That's disputed. Still disputed. Con claimed it was
you
Mulligan's.
You have searched and searched.
Con knew.
He went with Mulligan's.
When Con told the story, he said it was Mulligan's. So.
We'll go with him. By the way, the Palace Bar is absolutely full of stories, literature. Smiley, the Irish Times editor, used to gather around there. Patrick Kavanagh used to go there when he wasn't drinking at all and wait to be called, but he couldn't kind of break that circle.
Yeah, it was tough for Kavanagh. I mean, Kavanagh, you have to remember the poet peasant walked from Monaghan.
The whole way, yeah.
The whole
first
way,
journey.
Which is extraordinary, that story, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. Sleeping in lofts and around Slane and so on.
Just amazing. But made his way into that scene, forced his way really into
the
Dublin literati. But the palace features in the book in a really beautiful way through the photographer Lee Miller.
Yeah.
And I was adamant that women would take a very central place in this book. Even the cover of the book is Miss Cooney.
Oh, yeah.
Behind the bar in the Brazen Head. When we think about pubs, we think about
stunning photograph,
men,
by the way.
Pint men, bar men, men behaving badly. You know, we have an image in our heads of Brendan Behan puking on his shoes, whatever it might be. Lee Miller, this amazing fashion photographer and art photographer, arrives in Dublin in 1946 for Vogue magazine. They send her to photograph Joyce's Dublin. Mm-hmm. She's just been photographing the Second World War. She was at the liberation of several concentration camps. She was in Hitler's Munich apartment on the day news came true
really?
That he'd commit suicide. And she photographed herself in Hitler's bathtub with her muddy boots at the end of the bathtub. An amazing image. But she's in Dublin in 46 and she goes to Barney Kiernan's, which is gone, mm-hmm. and the palace, which is still there. And the image that she takes in the palace is just absolutely magnificent.
It's exactly the same today, isn't it?
It's nothing has changed.
Nothing.
Bar the men standing at the counter, nothing has changed. But she says that I not only drank in the sacred men's bar, as she calls it,
right.
I straddled the partition between the bar and lounge. And the idea of Lee Miller standing on the bar of the palace, getting that perfect shot, is just absolutely beautiful. Everything should come true.
She was the subject of a film very recently, wasn't she?
Kate Winslet played her in a really beautiful Hollywood biopic, and there's an exhibition of her work on in the Tate Gallery in London at the minute. And she's finally coming out of the shadows and centre stage, which is just extraordinary.
I must put that film in the list.
It's a place.
The Palace Bar is a sacred place. Still family run, third generation Willie Ahern.
Amazing.
And they're taking over Fitzgerald's on Al Naston Quay.
Bill Ahern's now. But yeah, you'd Willie, Liam and Bill, and a real institution. And by the way, listeners might know the answer to this. I don't know the answer to this.
All right.
Why, in the name of God, are there so many Tipperary-run public houses in Dublin?
Yeah, the Aarons are Tip people.
Absolutely, and it's a real phenomenon. There's lots of Tipperary pubs right across the city, but they've done a great job. And the palace has televisions, but they know when to use them.
Very, very rare.
They're very rarely on. It takes a national rugby game or an All-Ireland to put those TVs on. No pipe music, no TV. That, to me, is the making of a perfect...
But they'll have a session upstairs there at the...
On occasion.
Trad, on occasion. I wonder if they still have bottles of McCardle's ale.
Yeah.
That was the draw for me. I'll have to go in to find out. Barney Kiernan, you mentioned, on Little Britain Street.
Yes.
I didn't know about this pub, and it's incredible Joycean connection.
Yeah,
Barney... It's gone unnoticed.
Barney Kiernan's is the setting of an amazing episode in Ulysses called Cyclops, where Leopold Bloom is often described as Jewish. He's not Jewish. He's kind of Jewish. You know,
it's in the heritage.
His father was Jewish, but Bloom has kind of abandoned fate.
Yeah.
But he walks into the pub and a character called the Citizen is there. The Citizen is a barstool eejit. You know the type of guy.
The Citizen.
With his little dog, Gary Owen, is there with him. And he's questioning Bloom on what is an Irishman and do the Jews have a nation and all that kind of stuff. But the remnants of that bar is just about still there. On Little Britain Street.
That's off Capel Street in
off
Dublin.
Off Capel Street, in the markets.
Which is kind of a thriving place these days. It's very cool and trendy, stuff being built.
Well, two doors down was an early house called the Clada, which is now Bar 1661.
Oh,
one of the most fashionable bars in the
city. It's an illegal potching bar, isn't it? Yeah,
yes.
Very, very nice.
Yes, I remember that early house, actually. It was 18 or 19. I'm sitting in that early house and my day hadn't begun for that one. My night was ending.
Barney Kiernan's...
it's that kind of spot.
Barney Kiernan's up for sale when you publish the book.
Yes, and still is. It still is.
Is there an interior, do you know?
I'd love to look inside of it, actually. If the estate agent is listening, I'd love to see what's left of Barney Kiernan's.
I have to let you in.
But again, it's funny because, like, that never happened. You know, like Leopold Bloom never met the city.
Yes, I know what you mean.
There's
no other
city in the world where these events are. There's a plaque I walk by most days on Clanbrassil Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, here in James Joyce's imagination was born Leopold Bloom.
Sense.
Like, we've put up a plaque.
But his father was a regular haunter of pubs, wasn't he?
Oh God,
he heard all the stories. I presume he was in some of them.
Yeah, his father's a re-emerging character in the book in quite a tragic way, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, Joyce talked about the haunted inkpots of my youth. I think there was more than 15 addresses across the city where the Joyce family moved. And they stumbled downwards, you know, from a middle class life, really down to living in more or less glorified bedsits because of Joyce's father's drinking.
Is there really odd pub made a mistake on their Joycean connection? They have one, but they've got the wrong
store. I love that one. Mulligan's has a plaque outside with the date of Ulysses, but it's in Dubliners. Which, I mean, Dubliners are much more accessible book. And it's far more likely.
Because you mentioned Donal McCann, of course, the star of The Dead.
Yes.
That incredible film. And
probably the greatest short story ever written. And even in school, we touch on a little bit of Dubliners. So, yeah, Ulysses is wrapped up in mystery, isn't it? And I think after the Irish Constitution, it's probably the most talked about, least read book in Ireland.
Gabrielle's on to saying, I was in the theatre the night Alan Devlin left the stage, marched down the aisle saying, F it, I'm going home. Everybody was there remembers it differently. And it wasn't near. But there is a door from the back of that street in the gate.
There
is. Into the back
there
of
is. And Donal McCann, to give him his dues, he's one of the people featured in the stunning stained glass windows in Grogan's.
Oh, go away.
A great artist called Catherine Lamb made them.
I didn't know that.
Fresh out of NCAD when she did them. They're called the Day People and the Night People. And the one nearest South William Street, the Day People, the man who's sitting at the table is the great Donal McCann.
Matt Farrell's onto it. He says, Kavanagh was a friend of Dr. Rathigan in Edgeworthstown. That's in Longford. They drank in my father's pub, The Tea House. His sister, Mrs. Quinn, taught me in the school in Glen, Edgeworthstown. After drinking all day, to get a bottle of whiskey to head home. It'd be bought on credit. Don't know if it was ever paid for. A wild pair of men. I was only a kid at the time. Where did all the beautiful photographs in this book come from?
They're stunning, aren't they?
Unbelievable.
Speaking of I loved Kavanagh's nickname for Brendan Behan, which was Evil Incarnate.
He had a worse nickname for Kavanagh.
He did, and we won't say it on the radio at this time of day. But the pictures, what's amazing about the images in the book, lots of them come from Bord Fáilte.
Really?
And back in the 1950s.
Because we were advertising ourselves.
We were selling a product. And one of the products we were selling was the Irish pub. And there's talk in recent times that we should be seeking UNESCO status for our public houses.
Yeah, that's been talked about here and there.
Yeah, we're on a tiny little island, and yet Dublin is a UNESCO World City of Literature. Belfast is a UNESCO World City of Music. Mm-hmm. I would argue in both cases, public houses are part of how that happened.
It's absolute unique cultural treasure that's been kept and kept by these families.
And can you just create an Irish pub from tin? Like, you can go online, look at the Irish Pub Emporium, and you can buy the snug, the stained glass window, whatever. You can put that together in Dubai. But is that an Irish pub? Sinead and Kesht.
It's a beautiful book, Donal Fallon. Thanks a million for joining the 5 a.m. club, soon to be the 5:45 or 6 a.m. quarter past.
The quarter past six club next Monday.
The Dublin Pub is all you need to know. That's the name of the book, Donal Fallon. We'll take some break. We'll be back after these.
Email Oliver at rte.ie.